Welcome back to Stick a Fork in It, the official podcast of Feeding Tampa Bay,
yes.
The local community center. You know, one of the things we were thinking about today a little bit was going back to our schoolyard days. Were you guys good students? You guys think you were good students?
That'd be a no.
Not so much.
Actually, big, fat, no.
Yeah, I was good until like the ninth grade, and then I just didn't want to be
Well, define good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like, well, I was a cheerleader, and I was in sports, and I did all the things. And then the minute I hit ninth grade, I was sullen, and I was in art, and took as much art as I could in high school, and didn't talk to anybody.
Well, that's fair.
You do understand the concept of school is about education, not your social life.
Oh.
Do you notice how she answered the question?
Yeah, I did everything
There's
except
nothing
school.
At all about the educational process and what kind of student she was. It was the social activities that she was involved in.
Thomas, I wasn't done.
Ah, right, yeah.
Oh. I took all of that art, and I won art competitions.
Dang.
And I
what
got
was your
scholarships
medium?
In between watercolor, Ooh. Abstract, nice. Stippling. So that I went from being all about being a cheerleader and volleyball and playing basketball. And at one
and
point,
you became
boys,
a stippler?
It's called stippling. It's how you create a whole photo with dots, and you know it because I'm looking at your face.
Right.
Anyway.
It takes patience.
So that's what became more important to me because I was terrible. Like, I'm still terrible at math. You might catch me counting on my fingers.
Same.
Like, if I haven't figured it out by 57, it's not happening. But the other things, like the creative and the art, just that was my home.
Yeah.
I was a problematic student.
Is that so? You spent a lot of time in detention.
There is a fair amount of time that was spent in the company of several teachers.
Fair, yeah.
I remember when I learned
the
German.
Yeah.
I took German class in high school, and I said to one of my colleagues, "Du bist eine Scheißkopf."
Oh.
Which is, "You're a shithead." Which earned me a solid
beep,
2 weeks.
Beep, right.
We're going to have to beep that, which earned me a solid 2 weeks in detention.
Nice.
I did not like school in any way, shape, or form. Mm. I was a social misfit.
Wow.
I could not get the entire educational process. It was just, it totally eluded me. Horrible. I hated every single day of my entire education.
Wow.
Interestingly.
We should not be the norm for all those
Well,
that
that's
are going
fair.
Back
yeah.
To school.
This is
thank
not-
God we have, thank God we have our guest coming up. But I do want to point out, so I graduated high school in 1981, right? A little bit ago. I started college in 1986. And two things I would share about that. The first is I loved it and got all A's.
What?
Yeah.
An amazing difference in that process. Absolutely thoroughly enjoyed school.
Huh.
So I started in 1986 and I promptly graduated college in 2013. So it was a bit of a journey.
Yeah.
Yes. But you did it.
I did it.
You did it.
I did it over time, but learned to love. I think if I were to change my career today, if I could have gone back and changed it, I'd be an educator.
Mm.
I love the
I
idea of what school campuses are, the idea of learning, you know, the collective group. There's so much that was wonderful about it.
I'm just a few, 3 years behind you, right, in my school journey.
Math. So you were born, sorry, we'll just.
I graduated in 85.
We'll have a little primer here. What year were you born?
It doesn't matter because I graduated in 85.
You graduated early?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, there you go.
Wow.
Okay,
nice.
I did do some math there and made it right, Mance.
How did you graduate? Graduate early. What did you do to be able to graduate early?
Because when I went into school, it's because my birthday is later in the year. So my birthday is in October.
Mm-hmm. Oh, so you
so
weren't smarter. You were.
They moved the date.
Yeah. Okay. 20
can you
years
make sure?
College.
Right.
Let's just go there for just a second.
Maybe you could get that reaction shot for the viewer.
Yeah.
Make it a loop.
Yeah.
What kind of student were you?
I was an okay student. I often got the feedback from my teachers that like I could be a great student if I applied myself.
Boy,
oh,
boy, oh boy!
Yeah,
I had that.
Is that
too.
On every report card ever in the history of ever?
If you would
you
just
talk?
Try,
like, what was your vibe?
I didn't. I never asked questions or anything. I would do my work, but I never really gave it 100%.
Yeah, until you like
done,
like
but,
Thomas, you got to choose.
Yeah,
because
you. I did a lot of school. I have a master's degree. I never
do.
Really like.
Wait, what?
Apply. Yeah.
In journalism. Gosh.
I went far. I just didn't try very hard.
Oh,
well,
my gosh.
You.
Thank you.
Well, I think part of that, you know, when I go back to when we graduated from high school, the culture in school was very different.
Mm.
you didn't go to school, my experience, you didn't go to school and you were cared for. You didn't go to school that if something was lacking in your life, that they had something to plug in for you with compassion.
Yeah.
That was my, and I went to private schools all the way up until the eighth grade, and I didn't even know that was a thing until I started experiencing with my own kids. And obviously I have a spread, one's 36 all the way to 22. By the time I got to the 22-year-old, folks really started to care. Like they would call and say, something's going on with Chase, he's not himself, you know, that kind of stuff. Yeah. We didn't grow up with that. You did?
Oh, gosh, no. The question was more, is what's wrong with your son? That was really more the question that was being asked.
Oh,
But no, I don't think
depends
that...
on which ones you're talking about.
I don't think that... I don't think that at that particular time, and maybe it's different today, and our guests can help us understand this. At that particular time, the expectation of character building, of maturation, of learning about life came out of the household.
Yes.
Right? The school existed more to make sure that you had the educational, probably recreational, and a bit of the social opportunities to grow up, right? I think, but at that point, the primary responsibility for us as, you know, being raised in whatever way that was, that all came from our household. So when something happened in your or my age group, if you had done something at school, the school had no need to manage that. They gave it to your parents who were for sure going to manage that, right? They did not want to be in the discipline business. They didn't want to be in the, you know, they did some of that. But the reality was the penalty was your parents and the change of behavior was your parents.
Do you not forget that they used to be able to paddle you in
school? I was thinking about that. Discipline.
Yeah. They were able to discipline you and then turn you over to your parents.
So should they be able to do that today?
No.
Why?
Lay hands?
Yeah.
No, because in today's world, they actually do communicate with the parent when something's going on rather than taking it into their own hands and letting the parents know later that I spanked your child for this, that, and the other.
You don't think a little cuff here or there would be all right?
Not from a teacher.
It's a judgment threshold, I think. Teachers might be too paddle happy.
So at what point did, teachers lose the ability, and if they have... At what point does a teacher lose the ability, and I want to be clear for the listener, I don't think it's a good idea for anybody to hit anybody for any reason.
Right.
But at what point I felt like our teachers had authority over my life. I felt a responsibility to listen to them, even though I behaved in ways that was inconsistent with that idea. At the end of the day, I saw teachers as an authority figure, except for Mrs. Bishop in second grade, who was so pretty.
I knew. I thought he was going to say hot.
I thought something, yeah. Right.
She was so hot.
She had a little hair part on the side, and then it was auburn, and it came down to mid-shoulder.
Oh, wow. These are clear memories.
She had some little freckles across her. Miss Bishop. She had these little glasses.
That's like such a guy thing.
The freckles.
Because I cannot say as a – no, not the freckles. Oh. I can't say I had the hots for a teacher.
Really?
I did not say that.
Well,
let's be clear.
Yeah,
you didn't need to.
I said she was very
pretty.
You did
not need to say it.
And I would just sit and I would just moon pie over Mrs. – like Mrs. Bishop.
Oh, man. The only one you'd listen to.
I can't.
She could ask me to go out and wash her car. I would have done that. I would not have cared.
Word.
Right.
Yeah. So school.
Right.
So yes. And it's back to school time. And we have invited – I am so excited. This is a friend that I have made through our media stories, things that we do with ABC, Pack the Pantries, Food for Families. We probably met 5 years ago-ish or four. Yeah. No, 2019 maybe?
Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah, we go back. Mary
How's
Brown,
the
you
What's
guys.
What's the math on that?
Too many.
Well, I was thinking because it was before COVID.
Right.
Don't.
Well, it was before and then right after.
Yeah, right after. So you guys, Mary Brown.
Do you need to take your shoes off? Continue that.
Man, it's video now. When I throw the pin and it sticks.
Yeah, you won't just hear it.
Yeah, you'll see it.
I'm sorry. I've stepped on a thoughtful introduction of our guest. My apologies.
Yes, it's Mary.
Welcome, Mary.
Welcome. Thank you. Yeah.
So tell us about you as a student.
So I didn't have much choice. There wasn't a lot of free will there. So my mom was a teacher
at my elementary
school. Yep.
At the school you went to?
At my elementary
Twice
school.
As bad.
Yeah.
You're not getting away with
strong
anything.
Strong Italian Catholic woman. And then she followed me in education and became a principal. on the same campus. So my high school had an elementary school on the same physical
yeah.
campus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she was there then. So, yeah, there was not a lot of free will. Like, yeah. we were going to behave.
Yeah.
Everyone and get good
knew.
Grades and do all
yeah.
of the things.
Yeah.
Because we're
yeah.
going to tell your mom.
My cousin was in the same grade as me, and her mom was a principal in the district as well. So mm. both of us,
yeah.
it was like all eyes on you, and you will
oh,
behave
no.
at all times. So, But I did enjoy it. You know, school was never a struggle, but when yeah. you have an educator living in your home.
I guess
helps.
That's fair.
Right.
Definitely helps.
Right.
And then I went to FSU and
right.
I graduated in 3 years and became a teacher myself. So that's
nice.
Where my career started.
So when you were in school, going through the formative process of elementary on into high school, did learning come easily to you? Did the process of understanding how to take in information, you know, synthesize it, and then, you know, regurgitate it back out for testing and all that. Did that come naturally to you?
It did. Hmm. It did.
Because it didn't to me at
for
all.
For me. But I will say, you know, one of my siblings, as well as you know, my own kids, at times, they have their SLD, they have a processing disorder.
Hmm.
So to watch what a different dynamic they go through and how much extra work they have to put through
mm-hmm.
Really gives a different, you know, a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And that is when I became a teacher, I became a special education teacher
mm-hmm.
because of that.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah.
you know, I diverted from that before I had my own children, but it has definitely made, you know, being able to be a parent in this day and age.
Yeah.
I think that is a huge struggle to be able to assist with not only their homework, but, yeah. you know, the supports they get in school. And so that experience definitely prepared me for being a parent.
I bet.
Nice.
Because yeah. there's a lot of things, I tell you what, fifth grade math.
Thank you.
Right.
Thank you.
I don't know how I went
and
through
she's
the
a
first
teacher.
Time. Right.
Clearly, she's not teaching math.
That might be why she moved into what she's doing now.
Absolutely.
So tell us about how we know each other and what. How that started? What was that transition from being a teacher?
Absolutely. So, you know, at the time, this was probably 20 plus years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I came out and I thought the only way that you could support kids was to become a teacher. So, you know, and my mom was a teacher, my aunt was a teacher, so that seemed like, you know, the normal route. I became an ESE teacher and quickly realized how much more you have to be as a teacher. You're not mm-hmm. just going in and teaching academics. Mm-hmm. You are really being that support system, whether it's for the student, for the families. And at a certain point, I realized, you know, I wanted to do more. I
yeah.
wanted to be able to impact students more.
Define more. What does more mean to you? Like, how did you experience that? What did that – because
sure.
being in a classroom and helping a child learn a concept has to be a really important moment. And as an educator, the right, what you kind of dream of. But what was more for you?
More for me was kind of reaching out into the community and seeing what's there. Because at that time, having a mental health therapist in school or a food pantry, it wasn't commonplace.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had always worked at a Title I school. So our families absolutely had those high needs.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't – not only did we not know how to bring those things in or connect them, but there's so much – that you have to do to support the student academically, especially if it's a student in special education, where you were going home every day and there just was never enough hours.
Mm.
So I did start looking, and I was able to connect with BayCare, who I know you guys do a lot with
mm-hmm.
as well. And I switched my career path slightly, and I became a teacher in a residential psychiatric facility for the highest level of care of at that time, it was 6th grade through 12th.
Mm.
So
wow.
in Pasco County. And
yeah.
we had about 16 students at a time. And they would come to us with various high-level needs. They would live with us in that facility for 6 months to a year. And they would get round-the-clock, you know, therapists, medication management, psychiatrists. The families would get therapy. They would
wow.
get three meals plus snacks.
Yeah.
They were, you know, in clean living environments.
Right.
And I would see what a huge transformation not only the students but the families would mm-hmm. have as well. And then I got to a point where I realized this is all happening and it's wonderful, but it's in such a controlled environment.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And I want to be able to make a difference to more students. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, by no means am I saying that what's accomplished there is not
right. Of course, right. But that was the catalyst for you to expand yourself. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I started kind of looking back into, you know, Pasco County and the school system, and that's when I came upon a position open through Youth and Family Alternatives at Gulfside Elementary. They yeah. were looking for a director for a community partnership school. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like everything we were doing, but in the community mm-hmm. versus in this very controlled, very small environment. Yeah. And that is what led me to the connection
yeah.
here. You know, I came on, I want to say in 2017. Mm. And the program was just starting. So we were able to create and build out BayCare coming in and doing mental health services, Premier coming in and doing medical, dental, vision, Feeding Tampa Bay, creating yes. a Feeding Minds food pantry. Mm-hmm. So many amazing things. So that was also a COVID
yes.
hit yeah. during yeah. that time. So we went yeah. from having a brand new, open, beautiful, you know, pantry for families to come in and shop to – oh my gosh, how do we support this community?
Yeah.
yeah.
Right.
And then to follow up afterwards is when Shannon and I were really able to connect.
Yeah.
And with Cereal for Summer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I can say that one was, it was an emotional one for mm-hmm. many of us because mm-hmm. it was the first big event we were able to do again.
Yeah.
You know, family yep. and community engagement is a huge piece of community partnership schools. And just the kids being able to be together mm. and be yeah. part of an event. And, you know, I can tell you when the event was over, I had so many teachers come and be like, I didn't even realize we were missing that.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
man.
I, you know, we've spent so many years closed off
yeah.
because of COVID. And that feeling that you know, everybody excited together and we're mm. working towards something. They were like, yeah. I've missed that.
No. So
it was a really cool event.
It was really cool. So fun. So basically what we did with Cereal for Summer and with General Mills, mm-hmm. we came in and we took over the school. Mm-hmm. 10 Tampa Bay was there live in the morning. The kids really didn't know what was happening. And they all got to be together mm-hmm. and have a special snack. Mm-hmm. And we had cereal and milk and conversations
yeah.
and took pictures. It was one of, because I was kind of newly here, it was one of the coolest yeah. things I think, you know, I had done at that point. And
yeah.
it was so much joy because, again, it was after folks were locked down for
yeah.
so much.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to tell you, that was the first time I ever walked into a community school.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm sure you recall. And, you know, the dental and the mental health.
Yeah. So many
you know,
things.
It was incredible. We got to meet the families. And then another thing was a grandmother raising her grandchild. Mm-hmm. You know, so there were so many families at this school. And, you know, when we try to pull stories together, sometimes it takes a long time because mm-hmm. – or a little longer, I would say, because they may not know their community or the families as well. But when we were with you, you knew so many of those families from the community that came in.
Yeah.
You know, so it was – we had a celebration of people to talk to. It's just a – and you can see the difference in the kids' behavior.
For sure.
Right? Oh, yeah. They were the sweetest, kindest kids, and it was just an amazing experience.
Really
you were
was.
With me.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I think about that day all the time.
I mean, right?
We always say that, like, smiling children is, like, a cheat code on,
oh,
like,
gosh.
for our
yes.
photos and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And that was just a room full of beaming children. They
we
were
still
so
use the
excited.
Pictures.
Absolutely. Yeah.
They're
they,
gorgeous.
They loved it.
They're gorgeous. So tell us about now, and mm-hmm. Thomas will kind of take over from here because mm-hmm. this is more of a, you know, mission, vision,
yeah,
focus.
Well, I want to step back because I think, you know, I was just reflecting on this idea that we talked about at the start of the podcast today. And the question I guess I have for you, Mary, is actually I use an anecdote that comes from my experience here. Is I had a conversation with one of our superintendents probably 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, I got into teaching because I wanted to educate children. I am now in the business of having to take care of their lives before I can educate them. And so I wanted to just ask you to reflect on, and I think you've said some of this in your own journey mm-hmm. as an educator and your mom's journey as an educator. Where and how, if you can answer it this way, I don't know if it's that easy, where and how did we cross some sort of line
mm-hmm.
that you as an educator also became a caregiver. Now, I think we would all understand that educators were always caregivers. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I mentioned Mrs. Bishop.
Yeah.
Or actually, she was Miss Bishop.
Oh, even.
Oh, Miss Bishop. Wow. There were dreams.
She's
going
probably
on with
all
that
of
one.
26, but she looked like she was. So, educators, good educators, have always been caregivers, mm-hmm. but they didn't provide the kind of care you have to provide today, just in the general student population, not your subspecific area. Where did we cross? What happened?
Well, I don't think that we did. Like you said, I think it's always been. Mm. That's just always been. And I think a lot of people who go into being teachers go into it because they want to impact the full human, the full child. Mm. And they understand on some level that that does take, you know, supporting the parent, knowing what's going on at home, knowing if, you know, like you said, yeah. you would be smiley and happy. And then all of a sudden there was a shift.
Yes.
You know, and generally it is our parents that mm-hmm. notice, or I'm sorry, our
teachers
mm-hmm.
yes.
that notice that first. They're with these students for 6 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And then some are even longer than that because mm. they're coaches.
Yeah.
You know, so they're really spending a good amount of time. I think the shift happened when more parents were having to work and work longer.
Okay, this is about where I was starting to think about that yep. as a potential way that you would answer that question, because you're saying, I think, that at that point, the teacher became more of a primary caregiver in the child's yes. life than had been previously.
Yes, because oftentimes, I mean, even as you know, a parent myself, you know, you get a little glimpse in the morning. Mm-hmm. Your mindset is, I got to mm-hmm. get them where they need to be. You know, they're fed, they're dressed, they're good. Mm-hmm. And then I don't see them again until dinner time. The older they get, there's then sports. Yeah. So yeah. mine are at wrestling till 8 p.m. at night.
Mm-hmm.
So the amount of time I really get with them is mm-hmm. a very short window. And then it's often spent on homework yeah. or getting us prepared for the next day.
Yeah.
If you have an amazing relationship with your children and you yourself are in a great place mental health wise, you know, you can really focus. But the amount of time is just so much.
Yeah.
Now, if you add in that the child is going through things, or yep. the parent is going through things, or they have worries about bills, or fractures in their own relationships, struggles that are out of their control, then that window of really being able to connect and be aware on that level of what's going on with their child gets less and less and less. But then you have a teacher who's with them 5 days a week, you know, 6 hours a day, and really sees what's going mm-hmm. on with this child. They see those little differences. Mm-hmm. They also notice if, you know, someone is coming in and, you know, it's now day four and we don't have socks yeah. or they seem very uncomfortable in their seat or they're tired or, you know, they're not eating the way they normally do or interacting with their friends. You know, it's a window that our parents don't necessarily get to be in. Mm-hmm.
If there was ever a reason to love and admire and respect a teacher, you just told us what it was.
Yes, yeah. 100%.
That ability to... I think we're not even talking about the emotional weight that you must carry right. as a teacher, having these youngsters in front of you who you right. can see very clearly are struggling.
Yep.
And you may or may not have the means to resolve that struggle or enter into that struggle with them, but you sure see it happening.
Right. But they can alert the parents.
Right.
And that's,
unless
that's
the parents are
too.
The cause of the struggle.
Could be.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe.
Right. Not to put it on parents, but it's just it points out I think in our work we see a greater level of, we would just call it stress, right? Mm-hmm. As a general topic, we see the stress of life is weighing on people more and more. I would have to presume that as a teacher, an educator in a system that you're in, that has to be invading the world in which you are inhabiting every day.
Absolutely. And whether it's that you're an elementary school teacher and you're first kind of cultivating these right. tiny little humans mm. or you're in high school and you're trying to get them prepared for the next phase of life.
Yes.
You deal with a lot. And then and we're not even talking about academically.
Right.
Trying to make
right.
sure that these students are on track and moving forward and getting what they need. So I think it does weigh on them quite a bit. So, you know, with community partnership schools, that's where not only are we supporting the students to make sure they get what they need, yeah. the parents to get what they need, but the teachers as
yeah.
well.
So tell us about the concept of a community partnership school. How did that rise into consciousness or come into being? What was the idea behind that? We have several great community partnership schools in here in Tampa that have become very successful in creating better outcomes for families, for kids, all of that. How did that start, and how did how do we define success in that environment today?
Absolutely. So in 2012, UCF and Children's Home Society came together and said, you know, we want to kind of do something different here. You know, Children's Home Society historically, for the last 102 years, has been part of whether it be adoption-related services, foster care, preventative services, really working in the home. We wanted to make a shift. We wanted to be able to make an impact beforehand. We wanted to take some of the lift off of teachers, off of parents even, and we wanted to create these community hubs where we know families are already coming to schools. We know they're already comfortable. This is a place they feel like they should belong already. So why not take our resources and infuse them into there? So this is a model developed by UCF and Children's Home Society. It's 4-4-4. So four core partners. It's a school district, a university, a an FQHC or a hospital system, and then a nonprofit that is the managing entity. It is a an evaluation system that comes out of UCF. So when you say, you know, how do we know it's working? It builds that roadmap in. To work in tandem with what the school districts are doing. But it comes along with four core positions. So you're going to have a director, and then you have a coordinator in each of the areas that we've identified as high needs. So family and community engagement, expanded learning, collaborative leadership, and then, of course, well-being. So medical, dental, medical, dental, mental health, and vision. Being brought into the school. So, you know, it's no longer, you know, we used to do, you know, vision screenings and then send something home to families. Or, of course, you know, we would push and say, you know, oh, you know, your child getting your checkups or, you know, your dental exams every 6 months. It's important, but it was always just hypothetical for those families. Now it's, no, your child has an issue, and guess what? They can be seen right at school. We build it into their schedule so that they're not missing any, you know, core academic time. You don't have to take off of work. And that child goes right back to class. So it was a huge departure from the norm. It definitely takes an innovative school district and equally innovative and committed partners to come to the table. Each partner signs a 25-year MOU. So this is not a quick fix. This isn't a Band-Aid. Maybe it'll work for a year and we move on. It is true dedicated partnership. So
do you think this is the future of how schools could and should operate?
I do. Because those core partners come together. So, you know, Gulfside or Mort Elementary in Hillsborough. We've got USF. We've got the school district, Children's Home Society is the nonprofit, and then either Premier or we have Tampa Family Health in Hillsborough. They come together and their CEOs are sitting at the table collectively working with this principal and the director to hear, you know, what are your goals for the year? What are your struggles? What successes do you want to see? And then we're helping to move that needle forward. They're infusing not only the services, but additional dollars into these Title I schools and communities that wouldn't otherwise be there. So I do think it is. We have, at this point in time, there's 50 community partnership schools across the state, from Panhandle to Jacksonville down to the Miami area. And each year, we continue to grow. Each year, we go back to make a new legislative ask. So our budget is written into statute. So it is guaranteed each year to continue sustaining these schools. But each year we go back and say, you know, our data is telling us this is a need. So I will say last year we were able to get additional funding at each one of those schools for a consistent on-site school-based mental health counselor, which is just phenomenal.
Yeah.
Absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
So I do think it is the future. I think every single school, regardless, could use this.
Yeah. I don't know if this is – I hope this is an okay question. What is your mom still with us?
Oh, yes.
So what does your mom think of this?
She
grew up in traditional education, right?
She did. And, you know, she was a teacher. She was a reading specialist and then on up.
Right.
And she's just blown away.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, she my kids are 14 and 12 and, you know, she retired before they came along. So she's been out for a little while. And I think when she retired, she could have never imagined that this would be there. You know, they were having meetings with, you know, the school-based teams and trying to navigate through these things, you know, having teachers give referrals to, you know, the guidance counselors and school leadership saying, like, something's not clicking here or I have concerns. But they were limited to what they could do. Whereas with this, we now have a well-being coordinator. We have a family and community engagement coordinator. We have an expanded learning coordinator, a mental health therapist. Plus, we have this outlet of each one of these organizations that have dedicated time to be there and say, hey, I hear you. Mm. This is a need. We're going to help make that happen. So
you mentioned data.
Yes.
What are some of the key points that your data has found? Has the school gone up in, you know, their graded A, B, C, D? Like, how has... What are your proof points that this continues to need to expand? You know, obviously you've experienced it yourself, but tell us about the data.
Absolutely. So, you know, with any program, it takes time to get put in place and to work with Fidelity.
Yeah.
I will say this year we are celebrating one of our biggest wins, one of my schools that I support on the East Coast. For the first time since 2011, their school is going from a C to an A this year.
Mm, congratulations.
Wow, that's amazing. That's amazing.
You know, we have other points. So Gulfside was an example.
Mm-hmm.
In the 5 years that I was there, they came in year one with our kindergartners, and they did screenings. Mm-hmm. And we had, I want to say, 30 students that needed antibiotics. It was that high of a need with dental care. They had that many issues going on.
Wow.
After 5 years of them consistently every 6 months getting dental cleanings, getting sealants, having someone, you know, touching base and saying, you know, okay, there might be an issue here. Let's get this seen right away. By the time those students moved from kindergarten to fifth grade, there were absolutely no students in need of antibiotics or an invasive dental treatment.
Wow.
So it is exciting. We're getting to that place, you know, now that we've hit 12 years where you do have that data long term to really be able to see the needle moving in those different areas, as well as this model being used as an intervention for those schools that need school-wide, you know, assistance. Yeah.
So how do we think about and you know, with podcasts, it's always the you want to get in depth into subjects, but it's always the danger of getting too wonky. But I can't help but ask this question. Mm-hmm. The funding model for a school like this sounds more expensive than a regular school. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Mm.
So if that's accurate, then how does a community think about funding this type of school?
So that's where my position, as well as Children's Home Society as that nonprofit, come in. Over the years, we have taken a step back and evaluated ourselves. You know, what are the infrastructure needs? That's where, you know, a traditional school would struggle to get other organizations, other partnerships, grants to come in to be able to develop the funding to support these pieces. So we do have a philanthropy team. We do have a communications team, a grants team, and myself that work to get the grants, to get the funding, to work with the outside organizations to bring these pieces in.
Do you think that that's ultimately a sustainable model?
Absolutely. So, you know, it is, we have a 1 year in advance sustainability plan for every single school. As I said, we also have a 25 year MOU with each one of those core partners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, it is something that doesn't just happen by chance for sure.
Right. Yeah.
Well, I think it's, you know, as you're aware, because you've talked about coming into our new facility, our approach to our work has shifted dramatically. You know, for many years, we thought our goal and successful outcome was the delivery of more food. And we still think that today, subtle nuances to it, healthier and things of that nature, but we still think that today. But we've completely shifted our model because we understand when someone comes to us for a meal that is symptomatic of a household that has a larger level of disturbance in it, some sort of a variety of factors that are causing that. But for us, just like with you, it is far more expensive today to do the work that we're doing. And I think, you know, the model that you're building, at least in listening to you, the enduring success of that, as you mentioned, 12 years in, is pretty significant. I think for a listener, is there a story or two of an individual, a student that came through this your schools that you could have looked at the day they walked in and said, boy, I don't know about their prospects for success given the environmental conditions, and they walked out of that having a different opportunity?
Absolutely. So for the most part, I've worked with elementary students myself, and I will say in that process, I made lifelong friendships with families and children as they were going through these. But I think some of the most amazing successes that we've had, honestly, have come out of our own employees at this point. We have quite a few that themselves were students at the community partnership.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yes. And then came to work. My goodness.
And have full circle.
Well done.
Because of that director that was at that school, mm-hmm. that was, you know, one of...
So you just bring them to Tallahassee and let them...
We have quite a few students, especially out of Orlando's schools, that completely changed and turned their lives around as high school students, and have gone on to be Senate pages, have gone on to be part of...
Were it not for this level of care?
Yes. So they are our true testaments for sure. It's phenomenal. I will say of my schools that I support, I support five different schools, and three of those directors were students at their own school. They were there in elementary school, came back around, wanted to support their community that they've lived in and grown in, and they are now a director where their children are there in school and they're the director.
All the way, yeah.
So when we say we know these communities and we're embedded and we're really making that holistic change, it's those pieces, that really speak to it. I think the other piece is having the right partners at the table.
Yeah.
I want to say Feeding Tampa Bay has been one of those for me for years. As I left Gulfside and moved into Manatee and Hillsboro, that was my first thing. It was like, we need to connect with Feeding Tampa Bay. Clarissa Rain has been instrumental in developing so many different community partnership school Feeding Minds food pantries for us. And then to see how, like you said, it's not just a food pantry. We've done major events that then go into summer support. We've launched Food RX, where we're connecting our medical partner with our pantry provider with our schools. It just grows exponentially, and I will say that is one of the reasons that I've continued to follow along with Feeding Tampa Bay in my journey is that I see you guys are never complacent of we're doing it, we're feeding people, that's it. It's always what can we do next?
Yes.
I want to share a story with you, and it sounds like I'm throwing you a softball, and I am. But I want to share a story of our experience here. We have a board of directors, and they're important to our work in facilitating opportunity and support and resources. And so we decided to take them on a bus trip. We actually have a city bus here that we have our own. Cool story another day. But we loaded 30 board members on a bus, the team members, and we took them around to a couple of different spots to show them mission in action. We had just erected new food lockers, which is a new concept we're debuting here in Tampa. But we also took them to one of our school pantries. And the individual that hosted us at her school pantry did a really lovely job of talking about the families. And I want to make sure that I say to the listener, because I think this is important, when we built school pantries, we wanted to put food – we wanted food to be more accessible to families. What we didn't realize was we were creating a better relationship between the parent and the school.
Right.
We didn't realize we were going to improve grades. We didn't realize we would see better behavior, better attendance. I wish we had been that smart, right. But we weren't. We just wanted to find a different solution. But at the end of this, she shared this with our board. She said, and of course, the pantry is very important also, because about half of the folks that are using the pantry are teachers.
Absolutely.
And I reflected to our board later, and I would reflect to the listener of this podcast today, that we live in a society, to go back to what you said, and boy, I feel emotional about this, I'm sorry. To go back to what you said a moment ago, that we're asking an educator to be the person in our child's life who is their predominant, or at least a dominant caregiver in their world, and they have to go to a food bank to feed themselves. Mm-hmm. How do we think about that?
So that was a huge piece as a director, because, like I said, I was a teacher myself. Part of me moving from being a traditional teacher into another organization was because I wanted to have a second child. We knew we could not do it on a teacher's salary. Mm. So we made some choices, and I can't be happier because we do have her. Yeah, number two, right. Came along.
She's probably happy as well.
Yes. but my life trajectory took a huge shift, and I've been able to do so much. But I will say, even having that one child, I was on supports. We could not make ends meet. So to be able to, from true experience, be able to come in and say, these are the things that this community needs, and then be able to have another layer where we did truly, especially at Gulfside, mm-hmm. we would create special times, special events with different partners to only support the teachers. Right. Whether it be educationally, we work with USF for Teacher Leader Academy, where teachers can, free of charge to them, work towards master's degree. During COVID, we had teachers who, because we were in the Tarpon Springs area, many of them worked second and third jobs as waitresses, as bartenders, in the Tarpon Springs area, and that completely went away.
Mm. Right.
So we needed to make a major effort to help support them. And then as we come back to school in August every year, there's a couple of weeks there that those teachers are not receiving a paycheck yet. And we always make sure in that time that there's additional support. I will say, with Feeding Tampa Bay, that it is perishable and non-perishable items. The produce that comes in, the protein, it's not like going and getting a handout. It is a full meal.
Yeah.
It is sustaining their families. Yeah. So absolutely. It's
disquieting as a human.
Yeah.
It's disheartening as a member of our community. Mm. We said when we opened this new facility, you were gracious about saying what an incredible spot it is. And it is an incredible spot, built by the community for the community. But we said this at the opening, and I can't help reflect upon it again now. The good news is we were able to build this. Mm-hmm. The bad news is we had to.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The good news is you've been able to create astounding programs. Just listening to what you've done is just it is hopeful. Mm-hmm. It is exciting. It is, even going back to reflecting on us as students, if somebody had helped me understand how to fit in better.
Yes.
And how to socialize into an environment that I felt uncomfortable in and couldn't find my place in, right? If there was a different way for me to enter into that space, which is really what you're trying to do, is to make sure that the young human in your charge and in your care has a chance to just be a human and learn and have other resources around them. It's an amazing thing that you all have created.
I think one of the things that you see so clearly here when you come in, that translates to the schools and the food pantries that you guys have, is the volunteering and mm-hmm. what
yeah.
that does to a person.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
To make them feel involved, to make them feel connected to something. I will say our students help to maintain those food pantries. Mm-hmm. They have ownership over it. Many of our families that utilize those food pantries give back in volunteer hours. So it is this exchange that is done with such dignity, mm-hmm. you know, because this is something they have ownership in.
Yeah.
So when I, you know, coming in here today, even just the verbiage that's used really is amazing, you know. So while you may be finding someone at their worst on their worst day, there's so much built in that's not just the resource that's being given, you know. And you know, each year we do, you know, appreciation events over the summer for our volunteers mm-hmm. because they mm-hmm. are such an intense piece of this,
yes.
you know. And so many of them, you know, will say, like, we don't feel like we're doing anything. We just right. enjoy this. You know, right. they enjoy feeling like they're part of something.
Yeah, absolutely. Give something back to you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do you think is next on the horizon in your work? What do you see ahead as you start to think about this concept of a community school? What's on your mind now to say this is our next part of our journey?
I'll say a lot of the stuff you guys are doing here. You know, I would love to pick brains a little bit more about the innovative things you have.
None of the smart people are in this room.
They're all smart somewhere. I don't
know. They're all out there.
That's, Clarissa's just, in a meeting.
We're just podcasters.
No, truly. I mean, there's this level of taking things from, you know, here's a box. You're just one in a line. Move mm-hmm. forward to the cafes that you have here, or the Food RX programs mm-hmm. that right. are being utilized with, I mean, mm-hmm. Tampa General and others. Mm-hmm. Seeing these facilities of real food being grown, and then it's there for the public.
Right.
But then it's connected to whatever diagnosis is, whatever health issues they're having. It's that full life cycle. It's not just we're putting a Band-Aid on it and having you move through.
Right.
It's truly trying to, at the systemic level, figure out how do we change this.
Yeah.
And I think that's where we're getting. You know, we're figuring out what's working, what's not. It's also very much tailored to each school and each community and what their mm-hmm. needs are. We complete needs assessments ourselves. We also work with whether it's our FQHCs or our hospital systems to do more community needs assessments and be part of those, as well as United Way's ALICE reports. Yeah. So always looking to see where the gaps are. What are we missing? What needs to come in? But elevating a concept of food insecurity to mm-hmm. the level that's done here, I think that's the next step.
In all of this, my last question in all of this, what gives you hope? I think, and let me frame the question. We had a colleague, as listeners may know, you know, administrations in power in state capitals and federally consider what kind of programs there are and resources available to the community. And oftentimes those programs get shifted, cut, changed. And it can be hard when we're dealing with the aftermath of policy, right? We generally come into someone's world after the challenge is already been made in their lives. And so it can be frustrating. One of our colleagues said, boy, we're working hard here and it seems like we're getting further behind. Mm-hmm. And I think those of us that do this work operate on a significant degree of hope and this unwavering belief that somehow, some way we're moving forward. What gives you the most hope in what you do? You seem like a very warm and effusive personality, but what gives you hope in all of this?
I'll say, you know, it's kind of twofold. You know, I want to say that warm and fuzzy piece, you know, when I'm visiting the schools and, you know, we just had an appreciation breakfast at Mort and we had a fifth grade girl get up and give her mom the Volunteer of the Year award. Mm. And, you know, in her story, she spoke about how she knows her mom has certain struggles and is facing certain things, but you know, she comes in and she's part of all of these different events and she's helping the teachers and she's doing this and she sees how much pride it creates for her mom. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so seeing those pieces definitely helps me keep moving.
Yeah.
But I will say on the other end of things, the less warm and fuzzy, it's seeing that each year more and more organizations are stepping into this space and being part of infusing these schools with the pieces that we know all of those children and those teachers, those volunteers, all of them need, but it's just too great for a school to hold that responsibility. So seeing these organizations come in and take on that load and lift it off of the school and commit to being there and supporting them in those ways, just, you know, I've been doing this now, like I said, since 2017, and to see the growth in the field and to see the organizations coming on, whether it's nonprofits or it's businesses that are coming out and saying, hey, you know, we want to do a give day. We want to be able to give our staff volunteer hours, or we have this project. We want to come in and you know, do a capital project. What can, you know, make your school better? What can we do? Just seeing how when we started, or when I started in 2017, it was knocking on the door, trying to get people.
Right.
And now it's them coming to us.
That's awesome.
They hear about what you do and they're knocking on your door.
Yep. So, you know, that definitely, you know, gives that hope that momentum will continue on.
Thank you.
I think it will, because you're bettering the community. Mary, thank you so much, my friend, for coming by. And afterwards, we're going to take you on a tour so you can see the whole building. But, you know, I've worked with you for a number of years now, and I learned so much, even more today. Even about myself and my experience in life. So thank you so much, my friend.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
One of the questions we like to ask people, just because it kind of it equalizes all of us as guests and as certainly as hosts, we like to ask folks, we say everything good in life starts around a table, right? That conversations that matter, moments that you remember often happen when you're all together having a meal. And so we like to ask folks, you have four people at your table. You're one of them. You can invite three others, live, not alive, somebody you've never known, somebody you know, but to have dinner with you. Who are the three people you'd want to sit at your table?
That's a hard one.
Yeah.
That wasn't a softball.
Yeah.
No. That wasn't a softball.
We have had there no wrong answers, that's and true. We have had some wild answers.
You? Harrison Ford, Babe Ruth, Gandhi.
Yes. Yeah.
There have been some interesting – yeah.
But yeah. I'm torn. I'm torn because, you know, I come from an Italian family, and growing up, Sunday dinner was huge.
Yeah.
You know, and both my grandparents have passed. So to be able to get them back as an adult and pick their brains and – you know, my grandmother would probably.
So grandma and grandpa or grandma?
Both.
Okay.
But she'd probably have an earful for me because I do not cook in our house. I'm not. So she'd probably, you know, want to know where I went wrong there.
Oh, but she'd be so proud.
But and then I go to the other side, you know, kind of more that professional side. And I got to be honest, I'd love to get you at a table to sit down and pick your brain about some of these
you,
things.
Me,
that you,
me, grandma, and grandpa.
Yes.
I love it.
You would definitely be the first person that ever chose me.
That's really funny.
No, you have
I think
no idea.
The broader listening audience would suggest that there are better choices.
No, there's so much innovation coming out of here.
Yeah, thank you. And it's a team. But yeah, I just want to reflect back to you. One of the things, and there's another follow-up question, but it's so often interesting how we want people in our lives who have passed to be able to see who we've become today.
Yeah.
It's a common theme we hear from people who say, you know, I wish my mom or dad, or in your instance, my grandmother and grandfather could be a part of the human being that I evolved into.
Yes.
It's just, I think so many of us feel that way. So you're not the cook, but what are you serving?
Definitely not the cook. Yeah. Nobody wants
that. We know now.
What are you serving and why?
Oh, we might be doing takeout. I don't know.
Right. Your
grandmother's
table.
There.
I know. Yeah. That's even
is
more
it her?
So.
Would
no,
she
but
cook?
She could
oh,
cook.
If she could cook. Yes. Mm. Yes. And I can tell you right off the bat, if she was the one cooking, it would be Sunday, you know, spaghetti sauce, meatballs. Mm. And she makes chicken soup that is very similar to the one at Carrabba's. So I will tell you, like, there is this nostalgic, like, little kid that goes to Carrabba's just for chicken soup.
Now, it's interesting how you can tell an Italian person. You know how?
I was going to say, my hands are struggling today.
It's not the hands. She said spaghetti, then sauce.
Then meatballs. True.
Right? Yeah. If you were anybody else that's not Italian, you would say spaghetti
and
infer, right, spaghetti and meatball, and infer that the sauce came, right?
Right.
Italians see the sauce as, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, the meatball is the byproduct of
the sauce. The sauce.
It all comes together. Whole,
yes.
Yeah, but so did your grandmother call it the gravy?
No.
That's
that must be a northern.
Oh, yeah. It's an offshoot.
No. I don't know. So, but the gravy, and hers, the meatballs.
Yeah, you'd have the meatballs, you'd have the sausage, you'd have pork in there.
Oh, man. I want to come. Can I come, Thomas?
Thomas, bring your takeout.
I'm sorry, there are only four people.
Oh,
at the table.
Sorry. Oh,
that's okay.
I will be
leftovers.
There. Mary and I will be there together.
There would be those.
Maybe a future podcast, I'll share what we talked about.
I appreciate that. Yeah, the guests want to know, the audience.
Thank you, my friend, so much.
So much to take away from today's episode. Everybody has either been to school or has kids in school or knows people in school. And I'm curious what you guys think are like some of the maybe most important takeaways for listeners today. I think for me, like, it's the idea of the fact that like that teachers have become such primary caretakers and that they themselves are struggling. I'm not sure if everyone is aware of that, you know, there's a lot riding on teachers.
Right.
And they need help too.
Right.
So it's a consideration to make.
Well, and it just kind of humbled me a little bit about complaining on how I learned and how my experience with teachers and then the understanding of how much they may have been struggling behind it. You know, you're a kid, you're young, you don't think about, you know, now we do as adults, but, you know, I can't think many things have changed for a teacher that they need that assistance too, because they certainly should make more money and have all the wonderful things that the community school projects are bringing to their lives. So I just learned to give grace. That's actually what I learned.
I've largely been thinking about Miss Bishop.
Of course, naturally. Yeah.
Did I tell you that she was absolutely dreamy?
I heard something like that.
She
had
dreamy,
creamy white skin.
Oh,
and the freckles.
Lord. Yeah. And the freckles on her nose that provided this innocence.
I really haven't been able to move beyond Miss Bishop throughout the episode. I do want to say this. I think that if the listener takes anything away from this podcast, it is the absolute heroism of teachers.
Yeah.
The ability, the desire, the willingness to step into the lives of a child who has myriad issues going on in their world, as you mentioned, Shannon, without the appropriate resources. I just think, you know, we often label, I say this many times, we label heroes as people who throw a ball or a football or who, right? Heroes are people who do their work that no one ever knows about that ultimately changes, as Mary talked about, they have changed the trajectory of lives. And they are deserving of our thanks and our gratitude and our admiration.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And even more so, I'll just add a bit to that. Organizations like yours, Mary, that puts all the effort into making real change. And we get to do that alongside you, and so proud. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. See you soon.